this shows up all over. Not Damien, he's cool. This is another issue. I mean, the water stuff, I can't even begin to go into in a serious way. Water contamination, water loss, water drawdown, water transfer, and water privatization. Because we're speaking about indigenous law, something I picked up when I was at the Keepers of the Water Conference this year. In my territory, there's talk and prophecies of the hard times when the muskeg will burn, holes will open up in the earth. And I was talking with a guy from north of us. The Dene is a big homeland of the Dene. We're the southern end of that southwestern tip. The Dene from north of us, one of them in particular, he was talking to me, he said that, wow, we have the same thing, but us, we talk about a time when snakes will cross the land, and that'll be the time we have to watch the water. Now, I'm not sure what they saw in their dreams, but you can see how that would remind somebody of that. And I'm not saying you have to believe it. I'm not saying you have to trust me or anything. You don't have to adopt my position and my perspective and my history and my beliefs. But I think it's interesting we conceptualize conflict in that way, because conflict can come from older things, and things that might appear to be nonsensical can have a very significant impact on the people, the elders in particular, and as a consequence on the young people who follow their elders very closely. Earthquakes, self-explanatory, I don't want to get into that. But, well, you laugh now, just you wait. I would like you guys to read this. So the affidavit of my grandmother, Catherine Doki. And what she's talking about is not only the physical impact of the loss of a species on our land, but what that means for the culture. She can't transfer the knowledge and wisdom embedded in those things if they no longer exist. And again, in the spirit of sharing, I'll share something with you. The story I was told when we talked about this is that Grandma's grandma, Grandma McLean, had esophageal cancer. Cancer of the throat, I believe. And she asked the hunters to go bring her a caribou unskinned, unopened, which is very rare. You'd never do that. You'd always sort it out in the bush, take it apart, bring it in. And when you skin an animal, there's a membrane against the hide between, so you take the flesh and there's the hide, and then you have to scrape that membrane off and you've got the hide clean. You can go further in your production. What she did is she scraped the membrane from the inside of the hide out of the neck piece and used that to make medicine out of this caribou for herself, for her cancer. And can you imagine what the loss of the caribou means when that's the kind of thing embedded within them literally? Now that elder is long, long since passed on, but that's the kind of thing that's carried here. So again, when you think about conflict, it's not just medicine and culture and all these things, it's actually the very memories of our people. And yeah, it makes me sad to say, because I know that to find that stuff is very difficult now because those people are gone. Heavy heart type stuff. This is not heavy heart, this is just crazy. Whoa, hold on there. This is a picture I took in 2007. ConocoPhillips had an incident near Tumbler Ridge. And it's something you don't see a lot of, but there's a lot of issues that come out of this, a lot of conflicts, conflicts of interest. another issue, two of my late cousins both died very young. The point with this slide is one, to honor them and honor their memory, but also point out that even if there's no directly attributable deaths as a consequence of this industry, a rich community can be very dangerous. If you were given a dirt bike at a young age, if you drove a long way, tired, because you got paid, because your dad had a lot of money, there's a risk, there's danger. And this speaks to a different kind of conflict as well. This isn't just, I hope it's clear, this isn't just conflict between the indigenous and non-indigenous communities. Can you imagine the conflict between the father and mother after this child passes on? And the conflict in the family, my cousins who passed? The conflict that we speak of and the conflict I'm trying to address, the application of our indigenous laws and of our traditions, is a conflict embedded everywhere as a consequence of these developments. And that's the nature of life. You know, I don't pretend that everything's evil about the industry. But again, we conceptualize of it as way bigger and way more complex than what is often understood. And that's what I was hoping to convey with this slide as I honor my cousin's memory. Both died way too young. Another point, environmental injustice. If you are unfortunate enough to be from Doig, the talk I gave at UBC Law this afternoon, one guy was, you live within 15 kilometers, and this is from 2007, of an active operating well. And the play in this area is actually mostly sour gas. So you live within 15 kilometers of 351 to 400 active wells. And Doig River Indian Reserve School could be an issue. If you go to school out here like I did when I was a kid, 551 to 600 operating wells, I only went there for like 1 year, it's a different environment. You don't see this in Victoria, you don't see this in Vancouver, but you sure as hell see it in the rural, on the edges, typically indigenous. And that's another kind of conflict that I have a very deep issue with, on a personal level and from a more theoretical justice level. That slide was taken from a public health study undertaken by the public health or Northern Health Officer in 2007. Now, what I've tried to do is just distill and think about what's the commonalities through all these various places and spaces of conflict. What is it? And I do open it up to you. You know, at the end, we're going to talk, I hope, if I speak fast enough, about what you've seen and some thoughts on it. I would like you guys to think about what the commonalities are, because these are the ones that I saw. No, uncertainty. When I say uncertainty, I don't just mean like uncertainty for business. I mean scientific uncertainty, uncertainty of long-term consequence, uncertainty of the implications of this, uncertainty of what it's going to do to the gas prices domestically, because now gas is super cheap because it's everywhere. You know, what about the uncertainty of polluting an aquifer that has a recharge rate of 20,000 years and no one's mapped, so we don't know actually where it's going to go? You know, there is uncertainty of every kind, especially as climate change really comes home. And so when we talk about conflict, one of our issues is that the true uncertainty and scope and scale of this development isn't really understood, never mind engaged with by the regulatory process. And I have a theory that indigenous laws might step in to fill that gap because we're very cautious people in many ways. consultation, that'll get me into trouble, that little point. Cumulative impacts, I pointed that out earlier. Regulatory capture, I'm actually waiting for the day that Alex Ferguson is in the room when I talk about this. Is he here? No? Okay, so I hope someday he should be. Regulatory capture, do people know what that means? Regulatory capture, you heard of that? Some of you do, I'm positive. Just the capture of a regulatory agency by the industry that it seeks to regulate for the purposes of improving and facilitating and streamlining that regulatory agency's activities, essentially. Now, Alex Ferguson, 2 years ago now, a year and a half, was the former commissioner for all of us as British Columbians. He was the commissioner of the Oil and Gas Commission. Now, he quit and 3 days later hired on with Apache Corps Canada. Now, I'm not saying that's regulatory capture necessarily, but it looks like regulatory capture. And he's by no means the only high-ranking executive from an Indigenous government or the provincial government or the federal government to be taken and hired. You know, that's the prerogative of people. They have to pay their families. I respect that. I don't have an issue with people working for industry. But what does that mean for the regulatory ability, for the agency, for the ability to meaningfully engage with these questions of how we develop when that kind of thing happens on an ongoing basis? It's a point that I think we have to address. Another issue, and it's related, is the credibility gaps. And on this, I just want to make this point. Credibility issues are not unique to Indigenous, non-Indigenous state relations. They're not unique to the provincial government. There's credibility gaps everywhere, and that includes among my own people. Straight up. That's everybody. You know, even myself. You know, I've never worked directly for industry, but in many ways I've worked for industry as well, even if it's in opposition. You know, and so what does credibility look like in that world? Because the industry permeates the existence up there. And for those of you who've been up there, you'll understand. What does credibility look like in a world like that? And you see, you know, market value, $9.24 billion in 2008.